The announced topic for this evening is Christian and politics, and especially response to the Republican convention passed, and I would assume later on after the Democratic convention there'll be someone there. The connection with that, from my perspective at least, was simply that the Christian does have a connection, it's related to what's going on both in government, in the nation, and in politics, therefore. And because so much of our responsibility and a lot of the life we live is set by both the tone as well as the actions of the government, we ought to have a chance to talk about it. This is not an effort to get people to think in a certain way, act in a certain way, or vote in a certain way, but concern Christians sharing their points of view out of conviction, out of hope, out of fear, out of whatever it is and related to their faith. Having said that, I think it's only fair to ask if, before we jump into that, there are responses to the message that was shared tonight over at Vespers, that would be certainly appropriate to spend some time talking about that. I know already Larry has had offered another period of time when that can be a direct focus after people have had more time to reflect about it. But rather than not being willing to chat about that or open it up for some conversation, I'll start by asking if there are any people that want to speak to the matter of the Vespers this evening, the issue that Larry shared with us.
We had some discussion of it afterwards, and I think there were several of us and myself were concerned not with the message. I thought it was a fine job of preparation, but perhaps that was the wrong forum for that message. I think I expressed it already afterwards. I very much regretted that this was given as from the pulpit, with rather than a forum such as this, with no chance for rebuttal, no chance for expanding the perspective on some of the things that were presented. And I think particularly I was concerned about that presentation in that forum to that audience, impressions of young people, where there is a tendency today to resist the draft, tear down the government, lack of pride in the country. And as Larry said, there are plenty of reasons for having that lack of pride in the country and being ashamed of things we did. Yet recitation of the story in one format without any chance for rebuttal or without further explanation. If people accept what was said in total as the beginning and end of the story, I think it is a destructive way to have presented it.
Okay. I don't think that there to add to his dicks, I guess.
Go ahead.
I felt somewhat that, I'm used to balance and counterbalance, and there was absolutely no positive statements made, at least I didn't detect any. And it would seem to me that I know that there's been hospitals built over there. I know that we've got a university that was put up over there. And, the country was developed, and that country would not be at the point it is today, bad as it is, as far as oil reserves and the money that's been funneled in, if it was not for American resources that built those oil fields and developed them. There was nothing said about that.
Okay.
That's not right.
Thank you. Someone else? Yeah.
In specific response to the forum, I think it's also true that that is the only time when you can speak to the whole community, unless you want to try to make them shut up at dinner, and then it's only half. If it's an important issue, I think it deserves to be brought before the whole community, and that's the only time they're together.
I agree with you. That was a good way to get when everybody was together.
But the problem with it was that there was no, at least I did not feel that I could stand up and rebut some of the things that were said.
So you say if all of it's together, at least then there ought to be some.
That's right. There ought to be an opportunity for others. The other thing is, we came here cold. We had no chance to do any research on this thing. And I'm sure that in your research that you dug out, that you found good points also. I'd be amazed if you found only the negative things which were brought up.
It was the threat of where we are now. I don't think that anybody's trying to say that that building a hospital justifies all the other things, like, you know, the thing that's so ironic is that, you know, we have a constitution that says certain freedoms and all this, and so we go into another country and do everything only on the federal practice of these such in this country are and why they have this, where we have the hubris in here, we don't know.
Where do you think that country would be if we had not put any money into it to help develop that country?
I don't really think that that's the point.
I do.
Well, I have a statement. What was prefaced, the whole service prefaced as a confession. Mm-hmm. And in confession, you're not just a, what it's defined is you're confessing faults, not praising good attributes that you may have had. It's not that there hasn't been good done there, rather than confessing the errors that we've made. And I guess in the context of that understanding, it didn't bother me a bit. Also, I was in Iran in 1977, just before it began to get tense, and I had never been in any situation at all where I felt more oppressed and more fearful, not just for myself, but for the people lurking around the corners who walked without speaking, and the American-built machine guns and the men who were carrying them walking around all over. It was a terribly oppressive state.
What was the nationality of the men carrying the machine gun?
They're Iranians.
Mm. The machine guns were some of the things that for many years passed off as being the good and the dirty for Iran. That's why it's listed in the...
Can't hear you. Can you speak a little louder?
Sorry, but the machine guns have always been passed off as one of, that's always under foreign aid somehow. And somehow we seem to have convinced ourselves that it's good to send things like that to people. Right? That's off the subject, really.
Appreciate if you hold your hand up so we can keep some movement going there, okay? Yes.
Maybe to come back to the Republican platform, one of the items in the Republican platform is increased armaments, increased arms, and a firmer attitude, a firmer stand against the Russians, essentially, even if it means at the sacrifice of social programs. Keeping in mind that we just have chastised ourselves for supporting an oppressive regime, are we then going to accept the Republican platform for stronger armaments to oppose an oppressive regime?
Good question. Someone want to respond? Take your time, no big rush.
I didn't hear the other part, so I really may be speaking completely out of, you know, answer to a reference, but I just got here late. But I would certainly like to speak to the Republican emphasis there. I don't think it's just a Republican emphasis. I think that's an emphasis that's throughout our country. I'm personally not a pacifist, but I guess my own feeling is that that we have relied far too much upon the solving of our problems through more and more armament. I guess my own feeling is that we have somehow convinced ourselves that we are not putting enough into these weapons, and yet that is an astronomical amount of money that we put in every year, amount of money that if it were, even some of it were used in other forms, I think might help the world in which we live. I can't say as a person who lives close to the Trident base that I'm going to feel any safer in our world because we're going to spend X billion of dollars for a weapon system that will kill more people than the entire Second World War if it ever used. I don't see how, and so I just, you know, I don't say Republicans or whoever, I just think that we're in some ways the answer of more weapons, I don't think is an answer. And I think that we're going too far in that direction. I think we've been too far in that direction. And I think the situation continues to get worse and worse. And my fear is not so much for myself personally, but for my children, that if these weapons are ever used, that we will have no life left for our children.
Okay. Thank you. Back there? Yeah,
just to add to that, maybe, it seems like if Iran has shown us anything, it's that military armaments don't help that much in areas like this. I mean, Iran is helpless against our military, but that doesn't help us get the hostages out at all. And so increasing military buildup won't help us avoid Iran.
Thank you. Sir?
I guess I think that's an oversimplification. And even the previous, I think we're talking more about conventional arms, perhaps, than a nuclear arm. But if we can separate the two, I think the Russian invasion of Afghanistan maybe has shown us something. Obviously, I don't think we want to go in and resist the Russians in Afghanistan. That doesn't make much sense. But at what point do you resist the Russians with conventional arms? And to say that we can't rescue our hostages, therefore armament is useless, maybe is jumping a little too fast from one point to another.
Not sure. I heard everybody say armament is useless. That would be maybe twisting what somebody said. Is that right? Is that fair to say? I didn't hear anybody say armament is useless. So. Yeah, maybe somebody's going to say it. I haven't heard it yet, just to be accurate. Okay. Somewhere else?
I think a lot of what this man was saying, though, is armament at the expense of people's programs, social programs, increased defense spending where everything else is cut. I think that's where the problem is. The fact that as a nation, we increased defense 5% after inflation, our taxes went up, and there's a whole other area of dealing with that. But we're spending a lot more on armament, both conventional and nuclear, at the expense of programs that help people. In the state of Oregon, the State Department of Human Resources was asked to cut their budget 30%. The possibility of the Health Sciences Center, one of the best schools in the West Coast, might be closed for a year because there's enough money. Those are the sorts of things that hurts. That really disturbs me as a citizen, as a voter, and as a Christian.
Up here.
I have no idea what goes on in the minds of those people whose job it is to determine how much defense and armaments we need for protection of our basic rights. And, you know, there is a certain amount needed, and it's hard for any one of us to say how much. I think what I hate is that there is the possibility for a few people to misuse that and use defense as an excuse for offense.
Thank you. Someone else? Yes.
It comes to platforms of any party, whether it's Republican or not, and I haven't seen a fairly Democratic one, but I'm sure they're going to have one upmanship going on with Republicans on this issue. I expect it. But what really concerns me is that there are some basic human needs worldwide that are much more the cause of wars that neither party or whoever in the political system is addressing, at least, I didn't hear it equally, with armaments and defense. The issue of hunger, the issue of intercultural communication, and even an issue of international economics, even though it certainly is in there. You know, the whole need for production and all these kind of things that are coming out. The creative need for our political system to address creatively these problems which we build our armaments to protect ourselves from is really, you know, really disturbing. I mean, it's the old rhetoric that we heard in 1946 or so. You know, and I'm not just pointing out and putting the party, I'm expecting from the Democrats.
there, we're not really taking a look at what the issues for the ladies are all about in these platforms.
Well, I don't know how many people have been here that don't really know what's in the Republican platform, right? Because we've been, you know, cut off. Maybe the folks who are coming from the out, people who have been up and maybe watched some television spectaculars this last week would want to share with us some of the parts of the Republican platform that they've heard about. You were saying something.
Well, I'm doing anti-ERA, which the first time in how many years?
40?
40 years. I think, you know, best of the ethics involved in the vice president was going to be. And Bush made the statement that nothing else is going to happen, you know, even though we go to bed. And about 2 hours later, it turned out that someone else didn't go to bed for a statement as the vice president's nominee. They kept on TV very late that night. They were, well, the Human Life Amendment always went through on that one. I didn't see that much of it, but I heard all the flap and
great. Maybe somebody else. Anyone else?
Well, the Republican platform was really a statement in support of Ronald Reagan. Almost blank by blank, the basis is the philosophy of Ronald Reagan.
What do you understand that to be? If you want to hint at that, I don't mean give us a rundown. One part.
Return to, well, lessening of government involvement in one's life. God bless America.
Apple pie.
Union busting.
The return to the middle class values, as that is the only definition.
Upper middle class values.
Okay.
The constitutional amendment to outlaw abortion altogether.
Give further rights for investments for those persons who can afford it.
No inheritance tax.
And
well, a tax cut that's going to give the majority of the cut to people that have an income of $30,000.
And of course, increased armaments.
Increased armaments. They said they would not make any promises to blacks or minorities that they could not keep, but they made no promises. They didn't say what they would do.
Well, of course, that's no different than any other presidential candidate.
I don't know if it's in the platform or not, but there was a strong attempt made to trust that judges be selected on their viewpoint towards the right for life.
Somebody told me that was not, did not get into the
platform.
Is that right?
Yes, it did.
Did it get into
it? It watered down, though. I think
it's very generalized language. Basically, it's a statement that says a judge has to be in terms of support of family.
I understand there was a rhubarb on the panel of now that didn't get all the way in, and also on recognition of Taiwan getting re-recognized. But again, I understand that was not strong enough.
In support for the reinstitution of the registration of that, I don't support that.
Okay.
I
think if you were Reagan, I think probably one of the most important things is to re-emphasize is this to shrink the government rather than have it grow, have it less intrusive in our life, to give back to the states and local communities responsibility for the things that are local and the funds to go with it. State and such
as. Did not the funds to go with us. That's the balance.
Well, I think it was specifically, yes. The taxing right.
With the taxing right locally, is that what you're saying?
Yes. But that the original concept historically was that the government served the people, and it's fast coming around the other way. The people are serving the government and wanting to reverse this trend.
Okay. I guess we got a sort of overview, unless there's more on the platform.
What about alternative energy resources?
Oh.
I'm not sure if it's in the platform or not, but I think Reagan's stance is to develop new sources of energy rather than conserve.
Law of the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Repeal the 55, federally enforced 55.
Take the environmental restrictions off the automobile makers.
That's kind of a loaded comment, too.
So the thing I don't know what it is. I don't know. What else is it? I mean, if you're required to add to the cost of an automobile $500 to $700, $1,000 for a balloon restraining unit, that would serve. And I don't see that the cars are going to go down in price, even though they're not required to do it. The price is not going to go down, so I think it would probably increase the profit.
Let me ask two questions relevant. One is, do we today have a healthy auto industry in this country? And two, do you think that it would be beneficial to have a healthy auto company?
In turn, I'll ask you the question. Why do we not have a healthy auto company?
Well, there's several.
I can answer to that. Part of the problem is the workers' attitude right there in Detroit. I think there are some people here that I talked to earlier, I don't know if they're here, that happen to be from Detroit, and the feather bedding that's going on within the auto industry is pathetic. It's really sick. The people there are, as this was related to me, this is gossip, I guess, but this is the way it was related to me. They're slashing the cars of tires of foreign vehicles in Detroit because they don't have jobs.
So you're saying it's the workers that are causing the problem?
No.
Is that, no, what?
Okay, I'm saying, yes, that's one part of it. Okay, oh. That's only one part of it. I'm sure that there's a lot more.
It's really, there's three or four factors. One is the workers. The second is management made bad decisions as to what kind of cars to build. And the third is the Japanese have been very energetic about just avoiding these things. They've been building the right cars. They've been building better quality with better workers. But I guess I object to just sneaking in the government. And the government is the third factor, the government restrictions on automobiles. As you mentioned, the airbags, a lot of the restrictions on government, including environmental ones, have hampered the profits of companies to where they have not been able to reinvest. They have not been able to retool for some of the smaller cars and not been able to attract the capital to do these things. So that there's several factors that all work here, but to pass off to make an offhand comment, the Republicans are going to eliminate some of the restrictions and therefore help more profit, eliminates some of the, it's kind of a fast transition.
I don't know.
But we're welcoming all kinds of points of view. Yours is his as well as his. Somebody else, please.
Yeah, I think this, I heard a little bit of the Reagan philosophy about the worker. And I think the best example we have of that is the union busting that Reagan intends to do. You raise the point, okay, the Japanese have to have the same regulations as the Americans have to sell the cars in this country. So to say that, you know, that it's strictly the government is a cop-out to a degree. The other thing is, you know, raise the question, are VWs made in the United States of less quality than those made in Germany? And your answer is no. The biggest problem with the VWs and the recall is an engineering device, engineering fault, you know, which in turn gets blamed on the worker, and that's a pile of crap. The factory in New York that makes
Ford,
it's a GM factory, had been rife with union labor union management problems, and finally started talking. You know, one guy was getting in a lot of heat because he wasn't doing something on a windshield the way that
engineer designed it. But the problem was the way he was putting it in made a better seal on the car. Well, they finally started talking on it. They stopped blaming all their problems on the workers, and there's communication between the workers and management, and that plant's doing well, and of course it's making all cement from the car that's very much in demand, and if you know, if you ever work with it. What's the citation? Citation, pardon me. There's a very, very long waiting period to obtain a citation. And as we know so far, there aren't that many problems in it. But it's this sort of pointing the blame, you know, the same thing as the woman's fault if she was great. There's a lot of that kind of thing in the rating platform, that you know, the blanket blame on everybody for being where they are in case they're not in middle class America.
Okay, someone else? Up there.
I think one of the worst problems we have with the American auto industry is Madison Avenue. Giving us the image in our minds that we have to be comfortable whenever we're traveling. Luxury, sex appeal, and that's emphasized a lot more than the efficiency of the thing, which is most of the foreign cars emphasize more the efficiency of it. I think we're moving towards that out of necessity.
I think in some respects we have been getting what we wanted. That's the problem. I think call it Madison Avenue or call it the car companies or what, I think they had a pretty close pulse on the general America, and an Olds 98 that's I don't know how long it is or whatever, is what they wanted, and that appears to be what they wanted. And all of a sudden, they came, I mean, they didn't believe the problems to begin with, in terms of energy and so on, and we have the gas lines in 73, and then things more or less went back to normal again, and that proved it. So I think the problem is that all of a sudden people are maybe beginning to realize that there might be some truth to this sort of thing, and all of a sudden the car companies are just sitting there holding the bag right now. And I think that's where we are. That's been the biggest difficulty. They just simply are not buying. That hurts. When you've got billions invested in retooling or whatever it is that goes into it.
The question really be that the oil company.
Go ahead.
The oil company has given the car industry one of the biggest problems. Is the high prices. Because the Americans, they want high powered cars. And as long as they had cheap gas to run them, they didn't care how much gas they used. Just so it wouldn't be expensive.
Somebody, yeah, please.
The question is, where is the Christian fit into this? All of us dragged out our capital illustrations, but we still haven't talked about Christianity.
Well, I just want to say, defensively, everyone speaking here is Christian that I know of, and I would assume their perspective is a Christian one. I wouldn't assume because they haven't said Jesus Christ, they may not be. I just say that for a context, but you're asking for an explicit relationship to it. Want to lead off?
I'd
like
to hear something.
Okay.
And
gentlemen back.
I'll lead off. I think that the thing that jumped off the page as I was reading the Newsweek article on Reagan, it hit me right between the eyes and is going to drive me to write a letter to the state of Alaska and say, take me off the Republican rolls. The platform stand and Reagan's stated intent to seek once again clear superiority in terms of armaments over the Russians. That's the phrase that they're using in italics, clear superiority in defenses. And the Newsweek article, as written by the editors of Newsweek, estimates that the $40 billion to be added to the defense budget is very small, is completely inadequate for what is intended. It should read more like $200 billion would be the intention to add to the defense budget to win that clear superiority. I guess I'm at a point in my own understanding of the faith that I heard a guy in Holden say the other day, he thought he was the most radical guy in the camp because he was ready to stand up and shout for unilateral disarmament by the United States. And I thought, I don't know if that's so radical anymore. I'm deeply disturbed by that one issue in the Republican Party platform and with Ronald Reagan, and I can't imagine how I can live with that as a Christian person.
Yeah, sir. I think we're starting to drift into sort of a meaningful talk here because we're talking about principles. And one principle might be civil disobedience in Christianity, or the meaning of it too. But I think if we were to try to spend the evening just talking about details, we really wouldn't get anything out of it. And I think disarmament in the Christian or civil disobedience in the Christian. So.
Appreciate the perspective. Thank you. Someone else? Yes.
I think part of my problem in looking at the Republican platform as a Christian is I have to come to grips with, am I my brother's keeper? And as a Christian, that's something which I have to live out in my life. And as a middle-class American, many things in the Republican platform could be very comfortable to me, maybe even helpful, maybe my taxes could be cut and things. But what would it do to other people who are not as fortunate as I? Where would it leave the poor and the disenfranchised? And where, in a buildup of armaments, would it leave the rest of the people in the world who are also my brothers and sisters in the Lord? And so I think any platform, whether it be Republican, Democratic, or if John Anderson comes up with one of his own too, I have to look at that from a Christian perspective as to what it's going to do to those people in the world who are my brothers and sisters. And not take the cop out of, it's going to be good for me, so let's go with it.
Thank you. Someone else? Over here. Oh, excuse me.
Quite often, as a Christian, I reflect, even tonight's worship service, I think, puts the Christian politics closely aligned. I feel that quite often, whether you're Democrat or Republican, I agree with Lady said what she said over there, that sometimes whatever the platform is, if you recall the platforms of the last 30 years, what they say is not necessarily what we receive, but it's what gets votes. And sometimes what gets votes is not expedient for the Christian or even the best for the nation. And so a question I pose is that if we really say, we're sorry for what we do, does the majority of our nation really feel that way? We are a minority as Christians, I feel, in America. And therefore, I think we need to be influential as a minority, being that cutting edge of conscience, being that cutting edge of the people of God that we are and feel we should be. So what I'm saying here is I think in a Christian relationship to politics, you may not be elected if you go on the Christian principle. You probably won't be, because you would be against all the standards that would probably cause people to vote for you. You would not necessarily be a militarist. You would not necessarily be one for taxes. You'd be for, everyone has equal everything. But I find some difficulty there. And as a Christian, therefore, sure, I can say, I apologize, will you forgive me? But as a nation, here's where I think we are really in the midst of a struggle internally to try to determine where we go as a republic and what does it really mean to be a democracy. Not a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent. What does it mean to be a democracy?
Thank you.
Yeah, I understand. I think what you're saying, I agree with you. But one of the problems I see is that Reagan is a born-again Christian, and many Christians Yeah. Many Christians, especially those who are running television shows and all the electronic church stuff, are gung-ho to rape. And they're not going to apologize for it because we don't have to. We're American. And we're kind of a chosen nation, you know, to lead and save the world and do it our way. So for me, it's a matter of, you know, it confuses everything. If we could, as Christians, kind of say, what do we need to do? And I think that's what we're trying to do here. But it seems like when we start talking to other Christians, you know, you get all sorts of different views then about what it means to be a Christian. Let me just tack on one thing.
Sure.
I come from a city, and you know, I'm real concerned about folks who live in the city. I'm in middle class, but you know, I belong to a church there. What can we do for the poor of the city? And I don't see much at all. I'm not that familiar with it. It doesn't seem like there's much in the Republican platform or from what Reagan says. Much concern for the poor and the oppressed, you know, in a primary way. Maybe if we got some extra money left, we'll help out.
Thank you. Yes,
sir. I might be backing up a little, but on this on this military buildup, what I have a hard time dealing with is that I do not like the buildup of arms, but then I see these small countries around the world that look to the United States for protection, and I looking for ideas on how you respond to them when the answer comes from the United States. Well, I'm sorry, we can't defend you anymore. A good example is Tunisia is an ally with the United States, and Libya is always knocking on Tunisia's door wanting Tunisia, but they always stop because the United States is behind Tunisia. I don't know how to, you know, respond to that sort of thing.
Yes, sir.
Well, I like to come back to your comments on the gentleman from Alaska. His closing statement was he didn't think he could live with that in terms of spending money for rearmament. I would question whether he would like to contemplate living under Russian domination. And I don't think that anybody who has studied or does much reading in Russian objectives has to go very far to understand what the Russian objective is, which is world domination. And I don't know how you reconcile your Christian principles with picking up a gun and getting ready to fight the Russians. But I do think that it is a real issue and one that you better face. We have seen under Carter a naive faithfulness that unilateral disarmament will work. And if you look back in the last 5 or 10 years, our military personnel has gone down sadly in capability. We have ships that can't sail because there's not enough men. The Russians, who have never been a seagoing navy, have built up tremendous merchant marine and navy and are underbidding the U.S. merchant ships in carrying cargo simply to keep them alive and build up the merchant marine. Today, we do not have enough ammunition in Europe for a 90-day war. If the Russians wanted to roll through Europe tomorrow, we would be sad put to stop them. And you mentioned Tunisia and everyone else in the world who is depending on us to help them maintain their freedom. I don't think that there is any way you can avoid saying that the only way to stop this and preserve freedom and stop the Russians, that there is any way to do it other than by being stronger than they are, because it's the only thing they understand. And if you say at the same time, well, yes, okay, let's arm, but let's keep up the dialogue and hope that we can arrive at something else, great. I think we should go on talking. But I think it's been amply proven that you better be ready and be as strong as, maybe not stronger, as strong as the Russians, because that's the only thing they understand. And they're sitting back there laughing at us and doing just what they said they're going to do, while we hope that somehow they'll see the light and agree that, gee, it'll be a better world without the imperialism that the Russians are expressing.
Okay, we have two. You have one over here, and you. But I'd like to point out that you did say you didn't see the connection between killing and the Christian faith. And it seems to me that's what the discussion is about tonight. And that's you've lifted it again for us. There we are.
Yeah, I want to go back to what we can do as Christians. Please. Within the political sphere. We were talking about helping the Republic gain democracy. A man from you from Washington, and helping the poor. I believe fully in our democratic system, and the system is established of elected officials. And we can quickly interject our energy and our Christian principles in a race for an alderman or a city councilman. Or I'm from Portland, Oregon, and there's a real hot issue with school board members. Politics and the American society is really grassroots. And there's a tendency today to say, we'll let those people that are important handle it. The last election, just over half the of age voters voted. It's our responsibility to vote. It's our responsibility as Christians to find officials that we can support. And my head's go out and support them. Not say, hey, I support John Smith. But really go out and struggle for John Smith if you really believe in what he or she shares. And if it's what you, if it's Christian principles, then you should.
Yes.
Did you
mention
your hand up?
I think she mentioned. Or did you? Were you next? I'm sorry. I did. I promise you next. Go
I
ahead.
Guess what I wanted to say in response to the gentleman over here is that it bothers me that here we talk about ourselves being Christians and here we operate on the basis of fear and worry, and that basic fear goes back to Russia, and the only way we can deal with Russia is to kill them all. And we haven't talked about compassion and human life and love and concern about our neighbors who are also the Russians. And we haven't come up with any alternatives that we can use outside of fighting, but yet we're supposed to be the most intelligent nation, the richest nation, the most superior nation, and all we can talk about is fight and killing off and building more arms to get the ones that we didn't get with the last ones. And it goes on and on and on. And somewhere I think we need to identify where we are with our Christianity, where we are with ourselves as Americans, and what we really mean about democracy. And you know, until we really identify some things that, you know, really affect all of us, Christians and non-Christians alike, then we have nothing to sit here to talk about. And I think, you know, it's a waste of time. And it really bothers me when I hear we got to beat the Russians. And we've been fed a lot of propaganda, and we've been fed a lot of bunk, and yet we call ourselves Christians, and we don't do anything about it. And, you know, I like to hear some alternatives to fighting. It's just like the bully and being our next door neighbor. And every time we go out of the house, they're going to take a pop shot at us. And we run back and don't do anything about it. And I think somewhere we got to come to grips with that and learn how to negotiate and communicate and take on the Christian principles of love and compassion and understanding and patience and kindness. Where is it?
There's three here. One, two, three.
I got something, you know, that you touched on the electronic church and all this, and I think a lot of people look at that, I'm a Christian, you're born in Christian, I'll vote for him, and that's going to be good. Well, I'm so good born in Christian, that would be bulletproof for dog catcher. Yeah. But the other thing is, you know, the wave that Reagan is riding is what really scares the daylights out of me. Because the electronic church, Jerry Falwell, the Gaylords, down the Christian Research, they're coming out with all this stuff under the guise of gospel, but it is law. And it, there's nothing good news about it, and scary, you know. They would condemn the session we had up there with Jenny today because she talked about value clarification, and that stuff is, oh, that's a threat. It's going to take over this country, atheistic, you know, this paranoia. You've heard it too. But this sort of paranoia. Eating, you know, rather than coming out with anything affirming faith, such a gross paranoia, and it's feeding it, and you know, in this, you know, sort of unrest we have, economic problem, social change, all these things, you know, that people tend to run conservative, and then they get into this garbage. in Anderson.
Excuse me. Yes, in back.
Yeah, I was looking at Russia and the United States. I guess I'm responding more to what was said before.
Okay.
And it seems a real, in my mind, a tremendous waste of resources. They have the two most powerful countries denoting most of their energies to building up an arms pile. And what scares me about stockpiles is you never stockpile something unless you intend to really use it. And I mean, what could be more tempting than a great big pile of stuff that you could use? I don't, the whole thing seems to be a play on each other's fears, and that bothers me a lot. I really have a feeling that if we could go to a small town in Russia, and if we could speak the same language, that we would probably all be laughing and singing. And that's really sad in my mind. I feel like we're the ignorant ones to let our fears carry us away to the extent that we sacrifice our money and our energies in building up a stockpile of arms that we say we'll never use, but indeed that's its only intention.
Thank you.
I'd like to just respond. In a couple of weeks, our Vacation Bible School's mission project is going to be a way we're going to support way of legally getting Bibles into Russia. And so I think there's hope. If we can start this way in a small group, that it can go.
Yes, please.
One of the things that might be helpful for us, I think, is to realize that our political system does, you know, as has been mentioned here, respond to the atmosphere in the country. I think one of the difficulties of the fact was that when Carter was trying to negotiate some type of arms agreement, nuclear arms agreement, that there was probably little support from the churches our country. There was some higher echelon support, but the grassroots support is not there, doesn't come, and I really am disappointed in Carter that I know he's looking to the electorate, but I'm disappointed that he did not follow through, has not followed through on that kind of emphasis. I conceived him as a peace candidate many years ago. I really have some problems here lately in the last year in the direction that he was going. The other thing I wanted to say was that I think one of the things that we need to realize also is the fears that Russia has. Russia is in a precarious situation. They lost one of their biggest allies, the Chinese. If I were the Russians, I would be very fearful as a country. They lost Egypt. They've gotten a few small countries in Africa. But basically, Russia, in spite of all the rhetoric in our newspaper, has had a very poor 10 or 15 years. And I don't see them as invincible, marching onward, crushing everybody. They're doing good to hold, and we are in the same position. The last thing I want to say, that's the world in which we live. We are no longer in a world where we are the Russians can just say, jump, and everybody is going to jump. They are not going to jump, and we have to deal with people on that basis the same way we have to deal with Iranians.
Back there.
Maybe a little more general, but I guess for me the question of how Christian politics is, how do we as Christians relate to the structures of the world? It seems to me that it's obvious that the world is run by power. It's run by military strength, and it's run by diplomacy, balance of power type structures. Now, do we as Christians go into those structures and try and use those to the best of our ability? We can moan and groan about the fact that we are acting upon our fears. I don't think that's the way the system is right now. Now, do we enter into that system and try and use power in a balancing way? Or do we not go into those structures at all and go the unilateral disarmament route? If we go that route, I think we have to admit or have to be prepared to lose. because we are not changing the structures that way. And if we unilaterally disarm, I think we have to, that may be what we should do, but we shouldn't do that expecting to win.
Can I say something?
Where I can't see, go
ahead. I'm behind the hood here. There was a man here from Madagascar this week, and he said something to me that just really blew me away. He was talking about pacifism, and he said his position is that we should quit spending all our money on arms and use all that money to send out people and resources to the world that is starving. And he said, yeah, then we will lose, you know. We will be overtaken by the Russians. But he said, God has always worked through the poor and the oppressed, and he will continue to do so. And if that happens, then we will be the poor and the oppressed. And perhaps like Paul in chains, we will be able to bring more of the world to Christianity that way. And that just really opened my eyes a lot. And I think sometimes it almost sounds like we're worshiping democracy instead of worshiping Christ. You know, like we can't be Christians if we don't live in a democracy. But, you know, it's going to be harder to be Christians, yeah. But, you know, we can be.
I thought I had one hand back here first, then here. Was it back? Yes. Mary, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think, again, to answer the man's question, or partially not answer, but to, you know, what do I as a Christian do?
It
seems to me we're saying we want to be Christian, but we want to be superior and we want to win. And I think we have to decide what kingdom we're going to live in, and if we're going to live in God's kingdom and use Jesus as an example, and not calling naive, then we're going to love our enemy and turn the other cheek and pray for those that despitefully use us. And we're going to love, and we're going to absorb hostility, and we're going to work for reconciliation, but we're not going to kill anyone in doing it. And we might lose, yes. And I just think what the man from Madagascar said is absolutely right. That's what the cross has always been about, that sometime you're going to have to suffer, but that's how God saves us. And if I do become the poor and oppressed, then I know God is going to be with me.
Sir?
It seems to me that democracy is what's giving us the opportunity to sit here and have this forum and giving us the opportunity to practice our religions, whatever they may be. If you take away that democracy, you know, the atheist countries in Russia, as I understand it, is very oppressed. And maybe I'm wrong, but in East Germany, I don't believe that you can practice your freedom of religion. And I think that we're missing that concept.
Sir?
I would ask the two ladies from the balcony, speakers from the balcony, to relate what you have just said to Hitler. Would you really have not stopped Hitler? Would it have been your Christian duty to let Hitler go on, conquer the world, and use his tactics in terms of suppression, repression, genocide? Are all these things appropriate for a Christian to accept so that you can be the poor and oppressed and be saved? Or is it your Christian duty to have stopped the Hitler? Because that's what you're talking about.
Why don't you want to respond?
Well, Bonhoeffer was a pacifist. He called himself a pacifist, but eventually said we have to get the madman out of the carriage seat. And he did plot to assassinate Hitler. I assume had I been Bonhoeffer, I would have done the same thing. I don't think Bonhoeffer would have dropped a neutron bomb on him or something like that and obliterated him. I mean, I don't think there's a pure place to stand. But what my faith calls me to do now is to work for disarmament and know that my allegiance is to a completely different understanding of what power is. It's not a buildup of arms, because God says that his power is made strong in weakness. And I just think, as a Christian, it's entirely different than the world, the way the world looks at it, the way the United States or Russia looks at things. So I don't know what I'd do if there was a Hitler and there, you know, and he was destroying lives. I probably would not be a pacifist then.
Gentlemen, up here first. Yeah, and
maybe we can take an example from the early Christians. They didn't have any arms. It wasn't a question of how much they could have, they just didn't have any. And the Roman Empire was the force of arms. And they proved that the force of no arms can conquer the force of arms.
Back there first, then here.
I guess in answer to your question that the folks there, I don't think the Christian church in its existence is dependent on any form of government in this world. I can't imagine, it seems to me that the church has in history been most vital when it was under persecution, as a matter of fact. And I don't think, because I am grateful to be an American, it's true that I have many things that I would not have had otherwise, but I have the sense that someone thinks they're doing a favor to me by protecting me from the Russians. And in answer to your question, sir, directly, I don't want to be protected. I don't want to be protected anymore. I will take it. I will take it directly. I mean, that's what it means to me is, yeah, if it means living in an invading force, if it means that my wife dies, you know, brutally, I guess I really am coming to the point where I think that's what it means. And I personally am to the point where I don't want to be defended anymore. Don't do me any favors.
Right here.
I guess I'm really confused as to what our country was founded on. If I remember correctly, many of the people who came over here were coming for religious freedom. They felt like they were persecuted. They started their own colonies. By hard work and by taking care of each other, it seems to me that they prospered and we've become a very successful country. And now it really scares me when we're saying things like, let's disarm, let's give it all up, let's turn the other cheek. I see it on one hand as a Christian, true. Maybe that's the way to go. But on the other hand, I'm really wondering, is it possible to deal with non-Christians with a Christian attitude?
Here was another comment, I think. Did you have any?
But our colonies immediately turned around and persecuted anybody who did not accept their religious belief. There was this talk with the Shrams the other day. We talked about the distinction between being effective or being faithful in terms of lifestyles. And I guess that's what I'm struggling with on this issue. You know, is what does it mean to be faithful in relationship to militarism and defense and offense and all of that, on how does that relate to being effective? That is, maybe translated today, being number one, being more powerful than Russia, or being able to maintain democracy in this country and in the world. I don't know. That's a hard one.
I promised to mention that it would be 10 o'clock. Those who are quietly would want to drift, they may, but we continue. In back.
Yeah, I had.
And then next over here. Yeah, okay.
Well, I was second.
And Compline is at 10:15 at the Village Center across the way. Okay, please.
Thanks. Now, I was thinking of, as a Christian, you know, I wonder, we spend so much time talking about Russia, and we spend a lot of time talking about our position in the world as number one, and I almost tend to think that it's not so much Russia as just the idea of our position as being number one that is, for some reason, important to a lot of people. And I almost am getting to the point where I'm going to look forward to the day when the number ones and the number twos disappear. Praise the Lord for that day when we won't have to worry about who's number one and who's number two and who carries the most tonnage of wheat. We've got the United States, which is dependent on foreign oil, and is scrambling hard now to try to keep people driving 65 miles per hour down freeways in the city so that they can get from their office to their job, from their office to home. We've got Russia, which can't grow enough food. Its oil is going downhill. Its equipment is rotten. And they're spending all their money on arming themselves. And all the while, we've got all these people that are starving to death, and everyone is wondering who's number one. And then a fellow comes up to me, and he talks to me today, or a few weeks ago, and he's talking about Reagan, and he says, well, I'm going to vote for Reagan because he won't give anything away to the poor people.
Okay, over here and in here.
I'd like to agree with you and disagree with you on one thing. In your previous discussion, you said you were
confused and it was wasteful that we're all building up the piles of armament. And I totally agree with you, and that's what's so difficult to accept, that why do those madmen in the Kremlin sit there and spend their money on armaments rather than food? But you have to accept the fact that that's what they're doing to maintain themselves in power. And I guess I disagree that we're all interested in being number one. I think from my perspective or experience, it's not interested in being number one as much as it's interested in being strong enough to be left alone to do our thing with a democracy.
And then, excuse me, I'd
like to inject another question to confuse things. You know, we talk about taking up arms. Is that Christian thing to do? And right today, if we shift for a minute to Cambodia, we have no question that it's right to feed the starving Cambodians. And I think we have no question that we don't want to go in and defend them with arms because it's impractical. But I question, if it were more practical from a military point of view, would it be our Christian duty just to defend the Cambodians from the invading North Koreans? Or is it only our duty to feed them after they've been driven from their home, half-starved, marching across the country with nothing left? Where is our duty?
Okay. There are three hands that were before. Right here's first.
Well, I just wanted to say this thing about Christians and non-Christians, that there are millions of people in Russia that are Islam. And I guess I feel we have to respect other people's faiths and get along with the non-Christian as well.
Okay. And back then,
just a comment about the people in the Kremlin. I'm a little uncomfortable with the assumption that maybe the people in the Pentagon are sane.
And in back behind here, behind side, didn't you have your hand? Please. Yes.
I deal a lot with the public a lot of the time. And there, it seems like most people today are worried about the economy. And they feel like they need a change, and they feel like Reagan's going to give them the change. And they really don't care about equal rights, or that he's going to raise the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. They just think he's going to straighten out the economy. So that's the reason they're going to vote for him. And I feel like that's what most people are worried about, is themselves, and not their neighbor.
The Newsweek article underscores that perspective in his campaign strategy. Back there first, then here.
Let me give you a quote from a friend of mine, Nawewia Minashimwe from Namibia.
Can't hear you.
A friend of mine, Nawewia Minashimwe from Namibia, the daughter of a black Lutheran pastor there, has made a couple of interesting comments. One is that she has found the people in the United States to be the most ignorant of world politics of any people she has met. And prior to coming to the United States, she visited Cuba, and granted, they may have shown her the best parts of the program, but of course this is a Russian-run program for a lot of African students, and she was much impressed. She said that anything good or bad that